Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Ann Edwards, your lay leader today. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. We wish to extend special hospitality to those of you who are guests with us today. If you'd like to learn more about our church, please visit the welcome table in the foyer. Our reading is an adaptation from Reinhold Niebuhr. May I experience the serenity of one who accepts what cannot be changed, has courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, savoring each moment, accepting difficulties as teachers pointing toward greater peace, taking this imperfect world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting life that all will be made whole, entering, not resisting, the flow of the river of life where all are one.
Today's sermon is the third and the final in a series about change, adaption, and renewal. If ever there was a case study in the phenomenon of change, it could be found at this church, Austin, in this year of so many transitions. The title is The Art of Discernment and Renewal. The key underlying theme of my remarks is always, for me, a movement towards greater wholeness for individuals and for groups. A movement towards greater peace. A movement towards greater well-being. The question, however, is how do we see, how do we discern the path towards greater well-being and peace? And it is wise if we, in our searching, seek to access those wisdom traditions that come down to us. How do we know what wisdom is? We don't. We, in a way, are dependent upon the observations of many, many people down through time saying to us, by treasuring certain words, that this is something important to hear in our human journey. This is something that we can elevate among the noise and chaos of life and see in it something which abides, which aids us on our journey towards wholeness. And such is the prayer of Reinhold Niebuhr. It helps, I think, in some ways in guiding us to discern the path towards wholeness. Let me lift a couple of lines for special emphasis from what Ann recently read. May I experience the serenity of one who accepts what cannot be changed, has courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I would add one sentence, which I believe is implicit in this prayer, but I bring out into the open, thinking that it is true to the spirit of this prayer, which is, may I have the discernment to know what changes aid and support health and wholeness and the greater good. Let me look at each important line of this prayer. May I accept what I cannot change. Last week I received word when I was in the Seattle area that a good friend of mine, a fellow minister, aged 54, had had a massive heart attack. His doctor referred to it later as the widow maker. Fortunately, he survived. if he had not been at home, if his wife had not been by his side, if she had not acted very quickly as she did, he would have very likely died, or most certainly become seriously impaired. And this news brought to my mind another story, never far from my awareness, of a time 15 years ago when another friend of mine, age 48, died of a massive heart attack. This friend, who died, the one who died, was also a minister, a husband and father, and he was the very soul of conscientiousness. Fourth, or most probably fifth generation Unitarian minister. But my good friend had not accepted certain things which cannot be changed. My good friend enjoyed fine food too fondly, and despite his doctor's pleading words to curtail his habits, he continued to enjoy fine dining with friends far too much. He neglected his body. He treated it as a means toward an end, and those ends were always more important. He was hardworking to a fault, and for those seeking to do good in the world, there is no end to the opportunities. Yet the body cannot go full throttle all the time. These and others were limitations, were things that could not be changed, that he did not respect. Harvard educated, well-intended, good-hearted, and yet not seeing what was so real and what others were telling him was so real. We are so capable of being in denial of realities that we find inconvenient. But as the prayer reminds us, we must be aware of those things that we cannot change. The laws of biology are not suspended for my friend. So knowing the limitations of life, knowing what one cannot change, is very important. Part of the art of discernment is to know that. The second part of the prayer is, may we have the courage to change the things that we can change. This is the other side of the coin. We cannot be immersed in the awareness of limitations. That is the very definition of depression. The depressed person is always the one who sees no possibilities. We must see the possibilities, but we must work with the possibilities that are possible. It is the balance. Furthermore, as this prayer so wisely reminds us, change requires courage. Why? Because if change is real, there is always resistance to the change. There is never not resistance to real change. One of my mentors, Dr. Murray Bowen, wrote, after decades of experience in seeing families and systems of all kinds go through changes or deal with changes, said that there was always three reactions to real change. The first reaction is, from those affected by change, is, you are wrong. And that comes in many different forms. And if that doesn't work, there's a little escalation. The second stage of reaction is always change back. And the third stage of reaction is if you do not change back or stop, there will be consequences. The person or persons seeking to push back against the change effort are seeking from the depths of their biological being to maintain homeostasis, to reestablish an acceptable level of anxiety, where acceptable means what existed before the change. Consider for a moment the powerful seductiveness of the no change position. While the consequence of not changing anything may be boredom or unpleasantness or even destructiveness, at least we will know what will happen. At least we will know that we can handle it because we have been handling it. If we make a change, we may not be able to handle it. We may not be able to deal with the consequences we fear. And this effort to change back to before the change was initiated is automatic, grounded in our biological and emotional systems, and easily trumps reason. That is why courage is mentioned in connection with change. A person comes to my office. This person says, "I'm trying to initiate some change." I said, "Okay, good luck with that." This person says, "But I'm experiencing objections." I said, "Well, boy, that's a big surprise. I've never heard of that." And I said, "You know what? Let me share something with you. If you want to be engaged in change, you have to let go of the need for other people to approve of you. Can you let go of that? What are your convictions? Do you believe what you're doing is important or not? Or do you want to be approved and liked by everyone? There's a choice." Courage is the ability to face fear, uncertainty, and intimidation and not be dominated by it, but to stay true to the course of one's convictions. The third statement of the prayer is, "May I have the wisdom to know the difference between what I can and cannot change." I am convinced that one of the most tragic elements of the human condition is that we are very often trying to change that which cannot be changed, and not placing our limited energies on what can be changed, which is ourselves. We spend so much energy and time trying to change that which cannot be changed. Examples of this are legion. So many marriages or partnerships or committed relationships involve a covert war of wills with secret plans and strategies to change the other person. And the same could be said for the relationship between clergy and church members. I think that's one of the reasons why my dear friend in Florida died those many years ago. He was caught in the struggles of that covert war to change people into something they were not or could not be. And the same could be said between the relationship between a therapist and those seeking counseling, and teachers and their students, and on and on. Let me share an illustration from my personal life. One of the greatest changes in my marriage to my dear wife, Alfiz, who has suffered with me, lo, these many years, occurred when we matured enough, just enough, to stop trying to change one another, to give up the covert war, and focused on appreciating one another and affirming one another as we actually were. And letting go of trying to change the other and focused on being better people ourselves. Just imagine if in any relationship, whenever there was a problem, conflict, or misunderstanding, instead of blaming the other, we would ask, what am I contributing to this problem, conflict, or misunderstanding? And then changing that part in oneself that contributed to the problem, and then taking that changed self back into the relationship. Imagine how different life would be. Discerning what we can and cannot change, knowing the difference, and living out that understanding can make a vast difference in our life. Finally, I added the part of the prayer, something which I thought was implicit. And may we have the discernment to know what changes aid and support health, wholeness, well-being, and the greater good. Because that's what we're aiming for. My wife's grandmother, whose name is Alfiz, they've got Alfiz is going back to infinity in her family. Our oldest daughter's named Alfiz. We call her Allie. Had roots in France. Her family moved from France to New Orleans. And she was born in Mississippi and lived her adult life in Birmingham, Alabama. Up until the age of 60, she was a quiet, gentle, self-effacing, as they say in the South, Southern woman. The kind of person who, if you walked into her house, would effusively cover you with invitations to cook something for you and then serve it, whether you need it or not. I trace all my weight problems to her. Anyway, but at 60 years of age, she changed. This was the change. She started telling everyone, and I do mean everyone, all the time, and I do mean all the time, exactly what she thought about everything. It was like somebody had flipped a switch. No one saw it coming. The change had been, in fact, cooking in her for a long time. And then one day she just decided to bring what was inside to the outside. What had been dormant in her, namely a certain degree of self-assertiveness, was sprung out into the world. No one, and I mean no one in her family, liked this change. They wanted her to change back. And the various members of the family, with various degrees of emotional intensity, went through Bowen's three steps. The first one was, you are wrong, in the form of Grandma, what's happened to you? Then the statement changed back in various ways. And the third was, of course, if you don't change back, there will be consequences. But as they say in the Deep South, she walked through their resistance like General Sherman went through Atlanta. Let us remember that people do not change of their own volition. The events of life jar us, upset us, jostle us, and then we respond or adapt. And there's always, in that moment of adaptation, there's always a movement towards wholeness, and there's also a movement towards more fragmentation. It is our choice which way to go. In Grandmother Townley's case, my wife's grandmother's case, certain things had happened to her that could have led to her collapse into helplessness or into some type of emotional or physical dysfunction. But she went in another direction. She knew where the river of life was flowing for her. She knew that what she was doing supported her health, her wholeness, her well-being, although not a single member of the family at the time saw it that way. All the changes of life present us with a challenge to reformulate who we are. And as our Buddhist brothers and sisters remind us, everything is always changing. So the opportunities are endless. Change touches us, and therein lies the opportunity for a greater growth. Do we know where the rivers of life flow for us? It is a matter of discernment, of wisdom speaking to us and we hearing, of letting go of what we cannot change, of grasping what we can change, of following what is good and true and right for us. In this balance lies our future. I close with Niebuhr's prayer. May I experience the serenity of one who accepts what cannot be changed, has the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, savoring each moment, accepting difficulties as teachers, pointing to a greater peace, taking this imperfect world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting in life that all will be made whole, entering, not resisting, the flow of the river of life where all are one. I share with you these words of benediction. May the strength of our mother, the earth, and the peace of still deep waters, and a compassion embracing all persons, leaving no one out, be in us and between us until we gather again in the sacred home of hope. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.